Assuming you're looking at a retirement portfolio, one of the things you can do to alleviate that feeling of doom is actually just to zoom out. And what I mean by zoom out is not look at your investments in terms of day-to-day movement, but look at it over a much longer period of time. So I'm going to stick with the Dow Jones Industrial Average that you just mentioned as an example. You said that it was down 6% over the last month and 8% over the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. But when you look at it over the last year, it's only down 3%. Still down, but just 3 little measly percent.
Yeah.
And then when you look at it over the past 5 years, it's actually up 57%. So back in May 2017, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was sitting at 21,000 points, and now it's just under 33,000 points.
It sounds crazy.
I know, right? So if you had invested $10,000 5 years ago in an index fund that tracks the Dow, you'd have $15,700 in your account right now.
Right.
And you can choose between celebrating that you earned an additional, you know, almost $6,000 without lifting a finger for the past 5 years, or you can freak out because you lost a couple of $100 over the last 6 months, right? Like, you get to choose what you're going to react to. And I know this is hard for a lot of newer investors. We know that a lot of people entered the market for the first time in 2020, so they don't have a long period to look back on. But you will look back at this period in 5 years, 10 years, and see that, like, the market historically continues to go up, even though there are these dips in between.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. And today we are talking about recessions.
Yeah.
Wow. Not a fun topic. Wow.
It's not. But, you know, I don't want to make it seem like I'm not excited about this particular episode. I am, but I do want to set the tone and make sure that for anyone who's listening, if you're curious about recessions, if you're like us and you've been reading the news or watching the news and you've heard a couple of things about a looming recession, we want to make sure that you're emotionally prepared for what comes, if in fact that's what we are getting ready to experience. And, you know, it's like a indifference, right? Like this isn't necessarily something.
That's the goal. Yeah. I haven't achieved that level of enlightenment yet.
Okay.
Well, but maybe that is
at the
goal.
Maybe you should listen to the podcast.
Episode, yes, I will listen to this. That I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's like it's natural occurrence. It's like, you know, some people like winter, some people don't. Yeah. It's like winter's coming, it's gonna be cold. I'm like,
I don't know that I would say that it's like winter. That's probably a little too generous.
Okay.
Like, winter comes every year around the same time. But recessions are more like floods or tornadoes. Like, okay, to your point, they are natural occurrences, but they can be extremely devastating and really hard to predict. So I get why it's such a scary topic, especially for people who like predictability and expected results. So, you know, if you're on the financial edge, which by definition most Americans are, recessions can really be the thing that kind of pushes you off the cliff. So even if you're not on the edge, like, you might know somebody who is. So I just say this to say that we should be talking about it, but I totally understand why people don't.
Yeah, and I don't want to give away the entire podcast episode, but even as I'm thinking about who this particular episode is for, like, I'm kind of thinking about myself, like my former self when I was like 25, 28 and entering the workforce. And I know a couple of people who have entered the workforce during a downturn or during a recession. And that can be like a really scary thing because student loans become due and maybe you just bought a house or something like that, or you just got a car or whatever it is. And all of a sudden it just kind of feels like it's scary outside and the markets are down and no one's hiring or they're not hiring for the kinds of rolled. And it can be scary. I'm hoping that we can help to ease some of that tension as we start to talk about what a recession is, help you understand exactly what it is, and hopefully to be a little less afraid of it.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't our first rodeo. This is like number three, I think, in my adulthood.
Yeah. I've been through several. I was kind of combing through. Obviously, I was born in the 80s. I feel kind of old saying that, but I was born in 1980 and there was a recession then. Not that I remember it, but there was another one in the 90s. And I feel like my entire childhood was a recession. So I was like, I don't know. Were things bad? I don't know. Like, we never had much. So I couldn't really tell. But I do remember the 2000s. I remember the dot-com boom. And, you know, we were still kind of staying afloat. And I was in my 20s at the time. And it was kind of scary. But again, it's not like I was invested and, you know, watched my retirement portfolio or watched jobs go away. Like, I was still like going to school. And so I didn't really feel that. But I will say, because I was working in restaurants at the time, I remember that having an impact on business. Like, we weren't making nearly as much money because not nearly as many people were going out to eat. And so that was a little scary. But obviously the big one was 07, 08. Yeah, and so by that point, I was done with school and I was in the workforce, and I would say I was like intellectually prepared for it. Like, I looked at it as a true economic cycle, and I just remember realizing that this was a huge opportunity. And for the record, I'm not one of those people that like run around talking about, oh, stocks are on sale. Oh, yeah. Like, I get it. I don't need to do all of that. But I do remember feeling like, wow, like, this is an opportunity for people who have cash or who have access to capital to get in at a huge discount and take advantage of this moment, of these moments where stocks are more affordable, where property is more affordable. And I remember that being like the catalyst to me wanting to explore real estate investing. And ultimately, all of those things kind of spiraled into where we are today. So it's interesting. What do you remember about recessions, if any?
I don't remember. And that's actually a good place to start, like, with the definition of recessions, because it's one of those things that they don't call a recession until like well after it has already started.
Right.
So like, it could just feel normal. And then all of a sudden, you know, 6 months, 9 months later, they're like, there's a name for that. It's called a recession.
Yeah. You got a recession.
Right. Like, oh, that's why things have felt so hard. They don't tell you in advance. But I do have a definition for our listeners. According to Investopedia, a recession is typically recognized as two consecutive quarters of economic decline, as reflected in the GDP in conjunction with monthly indicators such as a rise of unemployment. However, the National Bureau of Economic Research, or NBER, which officially declares recessions, says that the two consecutive quarters of decline in real GDP are not how it's defined anymore. The NBER defines a recession as a significant decline in economic activity spread across the economy, lasting more than a few months, normally visible in real GDP, real income, employment, industrial production, and wholesale retail sales.
Yeah.
So basically, it's like the difference between a cold and a flu, right? NBER is looking for flu-like symptoms, right? Where the entire system is affected. You are down and out for the count, income, employment, all of that. But either way, it's still a hindsight thing. It's still like, well, after several months, then we'll call it what it is.
And there certainly isn't a tea or something that you can take.
No.
I'm like having flashbacks.
All you have is like pundits saying, I think we're in a recession. I think we're in a recession. And they do this for months and months and months and months and months until the official people come out and be like, okay, yeah, that's what that was.
Yeah, there's definitely a psychological layer to it,
as well
that contributes to it. Because if people feel like we're in a recession, or they emotionally accept that they're in a recession, then they treat their money and they're investing and hiring
and then that like all leads of these to things differently,
which is what leads to it. It's the same thing. This reminded me of the toilet paper situation we had with the pandemic. There's a shortage. Everyone runs out, gets everything they have or can find, and it literally creates a shortage, and the whole thing just falls apart. So there are a couple of things. I'm actually still kind of, I'm feeling real old school. I'm going to stick with the original definition. Like, right. I hear you, NBER, but I feel like that's what I learned when I was in school. And I really don't want that to change. So I'm really coming into my old age. I'm like, nope, this is what I learned. This is what it's going to be.
I
don't care what NBER says. But I do think it's important. Like, a couple of key points is that, again, you can't predict it, right? You only really know that you're in a recession once, like, lagging indicators have passed. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, that was definitely a recession. That's what we're in right now.
Right.
And we're not going to be out of it until we start to see some of these other things. And I think that's important for people to think about, because I'm looking at the positive side. You could be in one right now.
You could
be. And you have not allowed it to emotionally affect you.
Correct.
Until you started to see it on the news and you're seeing everyone talking about it. And so I think it's really, really important if you have a plan to just stick to your plan. Mm-hmm. Because assuming that plan was well thought out and grounded in sound fundamentals of personal finance and investing, you're going to be fine. The second thing is that there are a variety of indicators, right? It's not just about
stock prices.
Stock prices.
I know.
That's all people will see. It's like they open up their phone, they see stock prices, they see red, mm-hmm. and they think blood. Mm-hmm. The world's falling apart. And they feel like, one, that's the only thing that matters, or two, that that's the thing that actually triggers some of the other indicators. And it's not that simple, guys. Like, it's really, really not. Like, this is where I will give NBER, like, you know, their props. Like, obviously, it is, like it matters to them, right?
All right. Oh, now you want to acknowledge expertise. You know, look at you.
Somebody works for the organization.
That's how we got here.
Right.
People not acknowledging like the experts.
But it's a variety of things, right? It's retail sales. It's unemployment.
Yeah.
It's linked to the lending market. It's the stock market. It's all of those things combined that create the ecosystem that is our economy. And if all of those things aren't working as efficiently as possible, if we start to see shrinkage or just erosion of value or productivity, all of those things kind of contribute to what is considered a recession. Now, there is one big indicator, and I'm going to get a little nerdy here, and it's what's called an inverted yield curve. An inverted yield curve. So I want to break that down a little bit if you've never heard that term, or maybe you've heard that term and didn't really know what it was, because the news anchor never stopped to actually explain it. They just said, this is what we're seeing. But basically, when you think about short-term investments in U.S. Treasury bonds, you got to think about those as or a moment in time where they are paying more than long-term investments. So short-term U.S. Treasury bonds, there are moments in time where they actually pay more than long-term Treasury bonds or U.S. Treasury bonds. And so imagine a world where someone asks you to borrow $100 and they say, I'll pay you back with interest. And you're like, cool. Mm-hmm. And with that $400, they say they'll
$100.
Pay you. I'm sorry. And with that $100, they say they'll pay you $107 by the end of the month. And you're like, great. But if you let them hold it longer, they say, like a year, I'll pay you $105. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, that don't
make no sense.
Yeah, no, pay
run
me back.
My money
run
at
me
the
my
end
money
of the
right
month.
Now. That doesn't make any yeah. sense, right? It's like, that's how
I would
our
I
son,
wait longer that, for less money.
Exactly, right? It's crazy. And that's exactly those kinds of things that kind of create really weird reactions in the market, because it leads people to sell now, to mm-hmm. cash in now, and to stop thinking about the long term, right? It creates right. a bit of a frenzy, and that frenzy leads to instability or unpredictability in terms of long term market performance. And that's not good for long term investors. And that's what kind of leads to all of the craziness, right? And so that indicator, that inverted yield curve, I want to say it has officially happened. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think triggered a lot of the conversations around why people feel like a recession is coming, because historically, that one particular indicator is one that without question has always led to a recession. And again, even if you just think about it in terms of your personal spending, right? So when people lose confidence in their abilities to predict the future, they pull back on spending.
Right.
They pull back on investing. No one's going to go out there and buy a home if they're not really sure that the area that they're buying in is going to be a good place. Or you're not going to go out and spend lavishly on a vacation if you're not really sure that you're going to have income in the future in order to pay that vacation off or anything like that. And so in that sense, the government is not that different from you and I or families right. or any of our listeners. So that's your education on
inverted
what a recession is, inverted yield curves. You can use that example as many times as you want, and hopefully you feel a little bit smarter because of it.
I don't even know what situation I would need to be in to use inverted yield curve in a conversation, but I'm sure one might come up.
I guarantee you. And I'm going to remind our listeners that you said that.
I know. Don't none of y'all come
days,
ask me about no inverted
say, you know
yield
what?
Curve.
I was at a cocktail party and she said it was crazy. And he was like, girl, that's like an inverted yield curve.
I mean, it's a good example of like when people are less incentivized to think about the future.
Correct.
Like recessions happen.
Correct.
But I also think it's important to talk about the difference between a recession and a depression.
Mm.
So like we said, a recession, depending on which definition you use, is a period of two consecutive quarters of negative or shrinking GDP or growth, right? But if that goes on, it can blossom into a full-bloomed depression, which is basically a much more severe form of a recession. It can go on for years.
Yeah.
So this is like going from a cold to a flu to like pneumonia.
Yeah.
And then there's like COVID pneumonia. Like there's just levels to this thing. So obviously the Great Depression in the 1930s was one of the more notable ones, which I don't think any of our listeners ever experienced, because that would be you know, knocking on 100 years old. But if you... If you over 90 and listening, like, shout out to you,
man. We appreciate you.
Shout out to
you. I'm not even going to ask you to leave a review.
Right.
I'm just glad you're here,
literally. But from what I hear about that time, it was a terrifying time that really required this full-scale intervention of public and private sector and gave birth to many of the federal agencies and the programs that we know of today, like Social Security, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the FHA. Fun fact, there is a list of agencies called the Alphabet Agencies or the New Deal Agencies that were all formed as a response to the Depression.
Yep.
So back then, billionaires didn't just buy Twitter when things were shaky. They would actually contribute to the rebuilding of the country. Anyway, this has been the case throughout modern history. As we experience things and as our world changes, our government recognizes where there are gaps in oversight.
Yep.
And they respond by forming these organizations that are designed to fix the problem.
Yep.
Sometimes they create more problems and then another government will come in and fix those. And so that's just kind of how it works.
Yeah, as long as you blame the prior government.
Right.
You can just dismantle it.
And start a new one.
Yay, America. All right. I love the history lesson. Thank you for that. And thank you to Franklin Delano Roosevelt for leading the way.
I think it's Delano.
Delano?
Yeah.
That's my boy.
Yeah. You gave an urban twist.
Franklin Delano. Let's make sure we keep that in there to our podcast producer. His name was Delano. I think I knew what Delano. That's why I said that. Okay. So the reason we're talking about a recession, and we mentioned at the top of the podcast, is that there's reason to believe that we're entering into one.
Right.
So at the time of recording this podcast, it's early May 2022, and the stock market isn't looking so good. Again, it's one of the things that people look at as an indicator as to whether or not GDP is going in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. So in the last month, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down about 5%, right, just in the last month. When you look back at 6 months, it's actually down around 8%, which means if you're like us and you're heavily invested in funds like total stock market index funds, your account balances have likely shrunk. I didn't want to look, but I did look and we're down, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think it was like $30,000, something to that effect. Many of the people that we know, again, that invest like we do in those kinds of funds are down. But we all understand that this is the natural part of the cycle, right? Mm-hmm. But we wanted to make a point to provide some encouraging information about recessions so that if we're actually in one or getting ready to head into one, you, our listeners, can be prepared for how to think about it and how to emotionally cope.
Yeah. So let's start with the big one, which is investing. Listen, I know it's scary to put money in an account and then check it the next day and see less in there.
Yeah.
Like nobody likes that feeling.
It's part of the process.
Right. So I just want to remind you that you don't need the money today. So the decline really isn't relevant, right? Assuming you're looking at a retirement portfolio, one of the things you can do to alleviate that feeling of doom is actually just to zoom out. And what I mean by zoom out is not look at your investments in terms of day-to-day movement, but look at it over a much longer period of time. So I'm going to stick with the Dow Jones Industrial Average that you just mentioned as an example. You said that it was down 6% over the last month and 8% over the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at it over the last year, it's only down 3%. Still down, but just three little measly percent.
Yeah.
And then when you look at it over the past 5 years, it's actually up 57%. So back in May 2017, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was sitting at 21,000 points, and now it's just under 33,000 points.
It sounds crazy.
I know, right? So if you had invested $10,000 5 years ago in an index fund that tracks the Dow, you'd have $15,700 in your account right now.
Right.
And you can choose between celebrating that you earned an additional, you know, almost $6,000 without lifting a finger for the past 5 years, or you can freak out because you lost a couple of $100 over the last 6 months, right? Like, pick, you get to choose what you're going to react to. And I know this is hard for a lot of newer investors. We know that a lot of people entered the market for the first time in 2020, so they don't have a long period to look back on. But you will look back at this period in 5 years, 10 years, and see that, like, the market historically continues to go up, even though there are these dips in between.
Yeah. And I don't want to undermine or I don't want us to undermine anyone who might be feeling that kind of anxiety right now. We've been there. Yes. Several times. It's mm-hmm. in our book. We've spoken about it. Even just the other day, I made an investment and checked it the next day and was like, oh, God. You know what I mean? But I also remember a world and a time where we used to check our balances obsessively. Mm-hmm. And so now I feel like we're a little bit more seasoned and mature investors. We understand why we're investing, what the time horizon is. And so we don't really, like, there's very little value in paying attention to the day-to-day movements. And so just want to encourage you guys out there, if you're just starting out, that anxiety that you're feeling is normal. If you're 5 years in or 10 years in, that might still exist a little bit as you're looking or as you're hearing other people talking about, you know, what's going on, because I, you know, sold this and mm-hmm. got rid of that. And, you know, again, there's a lot of people, we call them fiddlers. They like to fiddle and tweak and buy and sell and rebalance and do all that stuff. That's perfectly fine. You can do that, especially if you know what you're doing. That doesn't mean that you have to do that. You can just keep on going forward, keep on investing, especially if you've, again, have a well thought out strategy and you know exactly what you're doing. Just less activity is more often than not probably the best activity.
Yes, yes. All right. We are going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back with a few more tips and things to think about if we're in a recession.
Okay, so something else that I want our listeners to look into is what's called the beta. Beta, B-E-T-A. Now, whenever you hear the word beta in reference to a stock or mutual fund, I always think about the word bumpy. Like, that's just the way that I think about it. And so,
oh, I can see that.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
The beta of a stock or a fund is basically a reference to how bumpy of a ride you can expect if you've invested in that particular stock. And so a beta is like an index, and it's expressed like a whole number or a fraction. So like 1.0, 1.4, or something like that. And a stock with a beta of 1.0 is one that has historically moved at the same level of bumpiness of the stock market, right? That's relative to the stock market itself. So again, going back to that earlier example, if the stock market is up 5%, a stock with a beta of 1.0 is likely up a similar amount, and the same is true in reverse. If a stock is down 8%, or a stock or a fund with a beta of 1.0 is likely going to be down the exact same way. But let's say the market is down 10%, and a stock or a fund that you're invested in has a beta of like 1.2, you can expect a greater decline relative to the market.
Right.
And that's something just to be mindful of, like, because you may be invested in some stocks that have a higher beta. Doesn't mean that it's a bad stock. It just means that given that stock's history or given that fund's history or the way that it's designed, that it is likely going to be a little bumpier of a ride. And it may make up for it with this anticipated return, right? There's like a risk and
high reward balance
there that you're going to have to deal with. But if you're one of those people that just can't stomach it, you know, and you can't stop yourself from checking the account, well, you might want to look at the beta of your funds and maybe select some funds that have a more normal or sort of softer ride. It's something that's closer to that 1.0, because that's pretty much relative to what the market is offering. And that's pretty much as smooth of a ride as you can get. I'm thinking a lot about like boats and like ships.
Well, yeah.
I'm also
actually
thinking about turbulence or something like that.
Yeah, it reminds me of those flags they use on the beach to communicate like how strong the riptide?
Whatever.
Yeah, the riptide is. Yeah, it's like an indicator to say, listen, if you want to go for a wild ride, you like turbulence, big swings, big upside opportunities, then yeah, you probably would pick a stock with a higher beta. But if that is causing you to panic sell or causing you financial stress and affecting your overall wellness, then like you might want to find stocks with betas that are closer to that 1.0 mark.
Yep.
Okay, so another thing you want to think about ahead of a recession is your debt. Mm-hmm. So assuming you're the type of person who prefers to be debt-free, then this really isn't an issue for you. But leading into a recession, especially if there's a chance of layoffs, you want to make sure that you're managing your debt so you don't default on a loan. For example, if you have a mortgage and you've been putting off opportunities to refinance, now may be the time to do it. But as a word of caution, the rates are typically not going to be as attractive as they are during good times or growth periods. Typically, when the market is booming, banks know you have a lot of options with your money and they throw out big, attractive deals to get you to spend invest with them. Refinancing your mortgage is no exception to this. And leading into a recession or even just the threat of one, they know there's a chance for significant loan defaults and foreclosures. So while you may think they'll be willing to refi with you, there's a chance they may not, depending on where your property is and what your history is with them. You may also, if you decide to refinance, you may also need to be prepared for closing costs and other fees associated with that transaction. So if you're short on cash or anticipate needing more cash or your job may be unstable, just consider that before you even jump into this option that you might have to come out of pocket for some cash that could probably be applied to something else.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a car note, those tend to be ironclad with far less options available for reducing payments. But what you can do is see if you can apply for an uncollateralized loan, which is basically a loan that you don't have to put collateral down for. They also go by the name personal loan. So assuming you can get one of those at a lower interest rate than your car note, you may be better off paying off the car loan and then servicing the personal loan, mm-hmm. right? Just using the personal loan
using
to pay off
to pay off debt at a lower rate.
Exactly. In our experience, you have to be flush with cash and have excellent credit to do something like this. And you'll likely be using a lender that, again, specializes in personal loans to get a better rate than what you have currently for your auto loan. So again, it's not super likely or probable unless you are already in like tip-top financial shape, but still worth exploring as you're going through like your emergency action plan break in case of break glass in case of recession, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, listen, I'll say this for those who might be in the early or middle stages of their career and are on the upward climb at your job. Listen, there are perks to earning more.
There are.
There are perks, right? There are lenders that specialize in offering more competitive loan products to you. There are entire companies and brands that cater to you, right?
There comes a point where debt truly is leverage.
Absolutely.
Which is how businesses use it.
Absolutely. Which is, again, why not to get on a rant about, you know, these rules of thumb, because I'm sure if there are certain people who don't earn enough, they're going to say, well, that doesn't make sense because personal loans are typically at a significantly higher rate, or, well, my mortgage company doesn't do these things. Like, I'm just telling you, there are lenders out there mm-hmm. who cater to high earners mm-hmm. and people who are flush with cash and don't worry about those things. They're willing to accept that risk and are willing to give people uncollateralized loans, like personal loans, because they want the business and they're willing to take it on and they know that you are good for it, or they believe that you're good for it.
Yep.
So if you're not there yet, hopefully you get there. And if you are there, you certainly want to at least explore if that's something that you might want to do, because car loans and those rates tend to be a little higher and you might be able to actually snag something for a lower rate.
Right.
A couple of more tips. Obviously, we know student loan debt is a huge, huge issue out there for a lot of people. If you've been delaying, or if you've just been kind of like deferring and just like ignoring any of those opportunities, now is pretty much the time to like jump in. And so whatever your situation is, I am not a student loan expert, but I know that there are some people out there who've just been too busy and don't have the time to even explore any of the things that are available to them. Now, leading into a potential recession is probably the best time to do it. I know it can be time consuming, but it's much better to get this out of the way before things get really, really dicey, because that's when like all the fine print comes out mm-hmm. and that's when people start, you know, shutting things down, and it's all about them trying to see where you fall in terms of people who are willing to pay and people who are not. And so the earlier, the better. It's been my experience that people who get started or start that process early before people or all the specialty programs start to shut down.
Right.
Those are the people that tend to reap the rewards in the long run. Last thing I want to talk about is credit card debt. You want to do, and this is standard, whether or not we're going into a recession or not, but you want to do everything that you can to reduce or pretty much eliminate your credit card debt leading into a potential recession. This could be paying it down using like the debt snowball or avalanche method. This could be looking for balance transfer opportunities where you're taking advantage of like a zero interest rate promotional period, or it could mean avoiding credit card spend altogether and deciding that between now and the next 6 months, mm-hmm. we're actually just going to focus on cash or spend on cash to make sure that we're not doing anything that could potentially increase the balance and lead to more fees or anything like that. And that's important because going into a recession, you might need a loan. And you want to make sure that you are able to get the best loan that you can. And one of the biggest things that credit card companies or banks or lenders as a whole are looking for are going to be credit utilization or your debt to income ratio. And so if you're focusing on making sure that you have a clean slate or that your credit score is as high as possible leading into a recession, it's like a safety net that you just have behind you that if you needed it, you can take advantage of it. But you really want to make sure that you're secure and firm leading into a potential economic downturn.
Right. So speaking of loans, this last little call out is actually something that we recommend that you don't do. Now, we know a lot of people who have benefited greatly from the real estate market in recent years. Mm-hmm. And if you've owned a home, there's a good chance that the market value of that home is significantly higher now than it was a few years ago. Because of this, people are often enticed to tap into their home equity using a HELOC or a home equity line of credit. So the way these work from all my non-homeowners or maybe new homeowners out there, if you have $100,000 in equity in your home and you can take out a HELOC against that equity for, say, like $40,000.
I think you can take it up to 80% of the equity that you have. That's pretty much the max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So in this example, let's just say you want to take 40 out of your $100,000 equity. In theory, HELOCs are marketed to people as borrowing from themselves. Yes, y'all can't see I'm using air quotes.
You're the bank. You're borrowing from yourself. This is what rich people do.
Right. I'm using air quotes. They're marketed as you borrowing from yourself or maybe using your house as like a piggy bank. But we are here to tell you that is a short-sighted way of looking at it. First of all, you are not borrowing from yourself.
Right.
You are borrowing from the bank. Because if you have a mortgage on a home, you're not really the owner. The bank still owns that property. Yep. They're just letting you live in it. It's theirs.
In exchange for steady, consistent payments and some predictability.
Yes, and hundreds of thousands of dollars in interest. Mm-hmm. Now, you own the rights to live there through your mortgage. And if you default on it, if you default on this HELOC, they'll take your home.
Yep.
So going into a recession, you just don't want to take out more debt if you can avoid it. And you certainly don't want to take on debt in your home as collateral, because if something happens that puts you in a situation where you can't pay your bills, you'll truly be on the brink of homelessness. Whereas if you defaulted on other loans, such as credit cards or student loans, you'd at least still have somewhere to live.
Right.
So let this be like a very last resort, or at least one that you take very careful consideration before jumping into leading to a possible recession.
Oh, I am like having flashbacks right now. I've never taken out a HELOC, but I know several people who have.
Me too.
And I know quite a few people where it really came back to bite them because, again, an unexpected layoff or a downsizing or just like an adjustment in pay or something like that, like really kind of tipped the scales and like put them in a really tough situation. This is also causing me to make like a mental reminder that we should probably do a podcast on bankruptcy, that process. Mm-hmm. Because that actually might be helpful. And I hate to say it, but like so that people know what that process looks like leading into a recession. Because obviously the two go hand in hand. The recession leads to, unfortunately, a lot of people being forced to reconcile their outstanding debts. Mm-hmm. HELOCs. I've never liked them.
Even in non-potential recessionary periods.
I look at HELOCs as, I'm trying not to be... alarmist here, but to me, they're really just like a last resort, right? Yeah. They're a last resort. So going back to the example, if you just were in desperate need of cash and you just start going down the line in terms of where that cash may come from, where the sources of that money may come from. Let's say the first option is an emergency fund. And then the second option is like being able to charge it on a credit card where you're going to have to pay fees and interest on that particular loan, because that's what a credit card is. It's just a little daily loan situation. Or you might be in a situation where you have to borrow money from a friend. Like, you've exhausted those other options. You still need more. Now I'm asking people for money. To me, it's like when you get to a point where you're saying, man, I need to borrow money and I'm willing to put my home on the line.
Right.
In addition to the loan that I already have on my home, like, that to me is such a huge indicator. And going back to the Great Recession of 2007, I remember that was one of the leading contributors to the downturn that we saw in the housing market. Like, it was a huge indicator. And a lot of it was really tied to just classic American greed and consumerism, this idea that property values were just going through the roof, and it didn't matter where you bought it. And not only am I able to buy the property, but then I could take money out using the equity. And the next time, or next week, maybe I stopped up some paint or something like that, and I've convinced myself that the market value is, because there are people out there who couldn't find a home anywhere else and they're willing to pay a premium for it. And the whole thing just sort of, when that tower started to collapse, so did all of those loans, and people started defaulting on it, and it all contributed to the foreclosure crisis. And oh, by the way, HELOCs are adjustable rate interest rates, right? So again, if you're unfamiliar with the Great Recession, read a quick little article, learn a little bit about ARM, ARMs, adjustable rate mortgages, and how all of those things contributed to it. And so for me, it's like, if you need a HELOC, you've got a much bigger problem
sometimes
on your hands, in my opinion.
I will say that they exist for a reason. And
correct.
Yes. There are people who are like, I don't want to call them diehard real estate investors, but like, all of their investments are in real estate. They've got multiple properties of different types and sizes and markets. And so they do rely on HELOCs as their emergency fund, as their primary lines of credit, because they don't have stocks or, you know, traditional W-2 jobs or any other income source, right? There are also people who may be financially secure and have a variety of lending options, and a HELOC may just be part of their financial plan to fund something easily. But again, there's typically, if that's the case, there's typically very little reason for those people to be concerned about their overall financial well-being, because they have investments. They have multiple homes and home equity and multiple credit lines available to them. So to your point, it's not a last resort for them. Like, it's a very strategic and proactive approach to getting access to capital. If you're using this as a means to get cash to buy you some time, that's when you should be really concerned.
Yeah, it is. Yes. If you're doing it because you need cash, that's a problem, right? It's a loan product just like several other loan products. And so long as you can make the numbers work, especially to your point, if you're a real estate investor, especially a savvy real estate investor, it's just an option that's available to you to help solve a problem. It may be an indicator of some other larger issue, but I think for most people, generally speaking, it's not a loan product that I think is something that they should explore. And if they get to that point, it's likely an indicator of a much larger shortage
it's
in cash.
Symptom, yeah.
For sure. For sure. Okay. Well, I don't know that that made anyone feel better. You might feel a little more clear on what a recession is. We did tell people what not to do, right? So, because I'm willing to bet there are some people, and it might even be couples out there, where someone's like, yeah, you can just go ahead and get all this equity. Because people feel real comfortable
they
with
do.
Equity. They were like, ooh.
And, you know, someone tweeted about this today. Bill Gurley tweeted about this today about valuations, because we're seeing these tech stocks be down 20%, 30%, like big numbers. And he's explaining
40,
that
some 40,
a lot of young investors are learning that valuations don't mean anything.
Correct.
Especially the ones that come in on the tail end of a 13-year bull market. Like, saying that it dropped from 40% of the highest valuation period, like, doesn't mean anything, because that's not the baseline, right? The valuation during a bull market is not the baseline. You really need to understand how businesses operate, how they make their money, what is their underlying assets and their profit and their losses, and like, learn how to read a financial statement to understand what a company is actually worth.
Yeah.
So the same is true for home equity as well.
Yeah, I love it. All right. Was that your final thought?
You know what? It could be, but I do want to just say this, because I'm honestly still learning to look at recessions as natural or even something that we can ultimately benefit from. It's such a counterintuitive idea that bucks against almost everything I've been taught, even as an investor, with the exception of buy low, sell high. That still works. So my final thought is really just to lean into those evergreen foundational pieces of knowledge, right? Like, they're typically not as nuanced as we'd like them to be, but they work in any environment. Things like auditing your budget, looking for things that you can cut, even if it's just temporary, making investments frequently and consistently over time, even if they're small. Those are the things you need to find comfort in while the rest of the market is kind of experiencing uncertainty, because those things are kind of tried and true.
Yeah. You pretty much stole my final thoughts.
Oh.
I can wrap mine up, though. Listen, I hope this works, man. But again, I'm going back to just like the natural feelings of it all. Like, when I think about, like, to your point, I have a much more comfortable relationship with recessions right now. I think about recessions like I do afternoon rain showers in the Caribbean. Like, it's, you just go inside, you relax, maybe you take a nap, maybe you watch some TV, get, you know, clickety clack on your laptop or something like that. It's a downturn, but, like, you know, things will be popping come 3-4 o'clock, you know, and you actually you find an appreciation for it because it cools things off a little bit. You know what I mean?
Normalizes things.
Like, that sun was beating on you.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like a natural part of the process. It, like, washes away all the things that probably didn't even need to be there. It just sort of cools things off a little bit. And I think that's all it really is. And, you know, obviously, sometimes those things turn into full on thunderstorms, right? And it can ruin your vacation. But again, it's a natural process. I think obviously it can be devastating for some people.
Right.
But to your point, if you're practicing those foundational or if you're practicing those fundamental beliefs about how to manage your money, you're living below your means, you're investing consistently, you're keeping it simple, you're doing all those things, like, it just becomes a period of time that you remember where things were not booming. But ultimately, when you look back, you can actually see how it actually benefited you. So hopefully that's the case for our listeners. And hopefully you feel a little bit more comfortably about the possibilities of a recession.
Amen. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. I know one thing that is not going down right now, which is the number of ratings and reviews we have. So if you'd like to participate in something that is growing, head on over to the ratings and review page and leave us a 5-star rating and review. We will see you next week.